Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run accountsrecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar discussing compensation structures. At a time when compliance has become as important as whether a payment is being collected, making sure that compensation is tied to the proper incentives and behaviors has never been more important. We're fortunate to have a pair of great speakers today who will share their insights and perspectives. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. To his credit, Chris Brickman has actively sought to help educate and improve the ARM industry through his support of these webinars and his products and services. On behalf of everyone who's learned and benefited from these events, I want to thank Chris for his continued support. You'll get the chance to hear from him a little bit later in our program. I also wanted to take a minute and say a few words about accountsrecovery.net. The site is the industry's largest network of professionals in the collections and debt buying industries. For nearly a decade, it has sought to deliver high-quality news and information via a platform that allows members to communicate and interact with one another. The site is free for everyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Tracy Dudek is the Vice President of Operations at State Collection Service. She is responsible for the call center operations, training, and business intelligence teams for state's 4 locations and nearly 600 employees. She's been in the accounts receivable industry for more than 20 years. Under her leadership, State has been recently recognized by Speech Technology Magazine for their 2017 Implementation Award for their installation and results of real-time speech analytics. And in 2017, the State team was recognized by InsideArm as one of the best call centers to work for. Christian Lair is the Chief Operating Officer of Healthcare Collections, a third-party collection agency in Phoenix, Arizona. He is also the Arizona Unit Director for ACA International and a former president of the Phoenix West Rotary Club. Having been involved in this industry for a number of years, but not nearly as long as Christian, I can say that he is one of the most knowledgeable and approachable individuals in the ARM industry. I learn something from him every time we talk, and I'm very excited to have him participating today. Unfortunately, Roger Weiss had a conflict and will not be joining us today, but I'm completely confident that Christian and Tracy will have a ton of great information to share. Before we begin today's discussion, I have a few housekeeping items. A recording of today's webinar will be made available in the coming days and will be available for download at www.accounts.accountsrecovery.net. Also, today's discussion is an audio-only event. There is no presentation component. So if you aren't seeing anything on your screen, there is no cause for concern. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll do our best to get to as many of them as we can. Questions must be submitted electronically. You can do so by clicking on the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, what is said in today's discussion is for general information purposes only and does not constitute legal or professional advice. Nobody should act on the basis of any material contained in this webinar without obtaining proper legal or other professional advice specific to their situation. And with that, let's jump right into the discussion. And Tracy, I'm gonna ask you the first question. Maybe let's start with a little bit of background and describe the process by which your agency developed this compensation program.
Sure, thank you. We operate a third-party collection agency as well as an extended business office. So we have 2 compensation structures. First, I'll mention the third-party collection agency. We use what may be a traditional multiplier times the base pay for our collectors. So they receive a base pay and then a 3, 4, 5 times their base, depending on the liquidation rate of the portfolio. And then they receive a percentage of the dollars collected on everything over the base pay. There's also a quality assurance component to that structure. So we have a flat dollar amount that's available for the third party collectors each month based on achieving their quality assurance scores of 95% or greater based on our speech analytics scorecard. In our extended business office, we have a different model. We previously had a flat bonus, and within the last year and a half moved to a scorecard in our extended business office. We do customer service and call center work primarily for healthcare facilities, and that scorecard is based on several components, quality assurance scores, no complaints, and then KPI metrics around calls, contact rates, and immediate payments. So when the scorecard levels are achieved on a rolling 6-month basis, each representative is available to able to receive a base pay increase depending on what percent they reach to their scorecard. So that was in lieu of or in place of the bonus structure we previously had. So that's the high level overview of bonus and pay plans for each of our sides of the business.
Thanks. Kristen, can you give us a little bit of background about how it's structured at your agency?
Certainly. And to let everyone know, we're about a 40-person agency, so we don't quite have the staff that Tracy does over at State. And ours is a little more simplistic. I think, like most people, ours evolved over time from the very basic multiple times revenue and then did that on top of their base pay. We've tweaked it some over the years, but we've kept it surprisingly similar to that. And part of that reason is feedback from our collectors. So for us, it is a multiple. They get their hourly pay, my collectors do. They then get a target, which is a multiple of their base pay, and then they get a percentage of that when they go over their target. We've essentially kept that formula, but what we've played with and what our collectors have asked us to do is increase the base pay, therefore increasing their target, which we've done on a more structured basis after at least 1 year of service with us. And we've done that given their history, given their performance, allowing them to more evenly split their pay as opposed to having a small and a large commission paycheck. What we found, though, were some of our employees did that much like they do with their income taxes to force themselves to budget. So it's one thing that I would caution people against if you're looking to make changes. Understand that a large commission check is often a need for some of your collectors, and absent that, they find themselves having trouble budgeting themselves. For the support staff, we've gone to a straight bonus per office goal. In both cases, for the collectors and the support staff, we have created a number of compliance-driven bonuses that we've done in order to sort of meet the guidance of where the CFPB was going, and we've actually rescinded those. We found that they didn't really contribute to our compliance. Instead, what we've done is tightened up our basically the obedience or the firing of people who don't meet our compliance goals independent of their pay. So we've separated those two out. We do have the compliance goals and the audits of our collectors and our support staff and the KPIs that they have to meet, but we've kept them away from the compensation structure and instead simply compensated them based on the revenue of the company.
Thanks. You mentioned, Kristen, you tweak the system over time. Can you talk about how often you go in and actually make changes to it? Is it something that happens on a regular basis?
No, it's not generally. The last big time we took a look at it is when we were trying to figure out how to incorporate the sort of guidance or the whispers that were coming out of the CFPB in their desire to have the compliance aspect rolled into the commission. Beyond that, I would say probably every year and a half, every couple of years, we've come up with different thoughts or possible solutions to what we think are problems and how we're compensating people, really to direct their behavior in attendance, direct their behavior in compliance, and obviously the big one being performance. But I've been doing this about 20 years, and I would say at least 7 to 10 times over those 20 years, we've taken a look at it to see if there were improvements we could make.
Thanks. And what about at State, Tracy, how often does the structure get changed or tweaked?
We go through a budgeting process annually that forces us to just take a look at the compensation process, but as needed, and I think a lot like Christian, as you're hearing rumblings throughout your floor and from your supervisors and other leaders, you'll see a need for change. Also different rate structures with your clients, or just the level of profit or revenue that you're driving from a client may dictate changes in the compensation structure, because you may find that that arrangement with the client does not necessarily support the structure that you're on, depending on how you price that for the client. But the most recent change we made was a year and a half ago in our extended business office, moving away from the monthly bonus to the monthly scorecard, and then every 6 months review of performance against that scorecard for a review of a base pay increase. And part of what drove that change was really getting out of the mindset of a bonus plan for the customer service representatives and putting them in a measurement zone where they were not only looking at the revenue performance, but also attendance, the calling statistics. The QA is still a very large part of it, but also incenting them to do some things differently than they do today. We have an assist mentor program, and we have certain training courses that we require our representatives to go through, and we wanted a way to reward and recognize those individuals that were going above and beyond. And just a flat bonus we didn't think was the right way to provide that recognition, but making it a part of their entire compensation package through the scorecard and giving them the ability to earn bonus points provided them that incentive. So the most recent change was a year and a half ago, but you could say you're constantly listening for where changes need to be made and evaluating the profitability of your program.
Thanks. At this point, I want to pause the discussion, and I want to introduce Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning to say a few words. Chris?
Thank you, Mike. Hello, everyone. I am grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. My company provides KnowledgeLink, it's a web-based employee education and compliance training application to a lot of companies in the collection industry. KnowledgeLink is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge expected of them when interacting with consumers. KnowledgeLink automatically builds documentation of the compliance training efforts of your company for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I've spent much of my career on your side of the desk. I've worked in the collection industry for more than 30 years, most of that time in executive management of a collection firm. KnowledgeLink was created to address many of the shortcomings in training and compliance that I saw as COO and CEO. You can use KnowledgeLink to implement an ongoing continuous training cycle, reinforcing the knowledge you expect staff members to have before it begins to fade from memory, to present collection client or company policies to your staff members during onboarding training or at ongoing recurring schedules where they acknowledge they have read and understand these policies, to present tests during training events to validate learning, and on recurring schedules to certify staff in areas you wish, such as the FDCPA or HIPAA or other areas. Use KnowledgeLink during training events to present videos or slideshows followed by a set of questions to validate participation and learning. In summary, KnowledgeLink closes knowledge gaps, promotes accountability, lowers the cost of training, and documents for prospective and existing clients, regulators, and auditors your company's proactive role in preventing compliance nonconformities. To find out more about us, visit peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks again for sponsoring today's event. Now let's get back to our discussion. I asked this question because I've heard rumblings from from some agency executives over the last year or maybe 18 months talking about this, and some have tested it. So I'm curious to see from both of you, Tracy and Christian. I'm going to ask you first, Tracy, whether or not you've experimented or discussed using a straight salary structure for your collection agency, you know, the frontline collectors.
We have not tested that structure. It certainly has come up in some conversation, but it has not gained momentum within our shop. I would say it hasn't gained momentum just because we still do enjoy the competition and the drive that each of those collectors has to determine, you know, what their paycheck is. We have found that some individuals who are, you know, have asked for this, they tend to be tenured individuals, and, you know, you consider it or you could think about it because their performance has been predictable. But when you get in the part of the discussion of, well, then your salary or your base pay is X and you're not having the ability to make it ever go over X, they tend to back down from that idea. So that's where it's been in our world.
And I'll jump in here if you're done, Tracy. We've been exactly the same. We've gone through the exact same process. It's come up. We've discussed it. We've had tenured people lament the fact that they have to continue performing, but we've not had anyone sort of want to jump on that straight salary bandwagon unless it's above and beyond what their highest year was. At least that's the feedback I've gotten from my employees. And we just don't see the value in it because of the competition, because of the ability of our people to drive their paycheck higher and encouraging them to meet their performance goals and exceed them.
So Christian, the agents in your office are comfortable with this, with that competition and with that drive to try and collect more money so their commission checks are higher?
They seem to be, and I have a number of long tenured. I've got people who have been with me for over 15 years. They, again, when presented with the fact that that means you will never, ever earn a dime above whatever that salary is, they really just don't like the thought of it. They still have that drive in them. And for those collectors who don't have that drive, I suspect my office is like everyone else's. The collectors probably don't stay there long. It's not an easy job to do. And with that incentive of a big commission check, if they hit a couple of big payments or if they can structure their you know, payment arrangements in order to have their revenue continually going up month to month, if the collector doesn't have that drive, they're not going to be there, whether it's because of them or you. And the ones that do work for that, they really don't seem to want to change it.
And I'll just jump in and add that in our extended business office, it is not a, you know, a percent of your base pay. Like I said, it's the scorecard. And if we find individuals that, you know, do not want to wait the 6 months of strong performance to increase their base pay, then we do have conversations very actively about whether the third-party collection group is a better fit for them. And, you know, some people make the change and they want to be in that environment where they can really control their pay with the commission structure. But when we're interviewing and recruiting, we find there to be just real distinct personalities that lean toward the customer service, base pay, use the scorecard, you know, willing to do a lot of really hard work, just like the third-party collectors, but want to be in more of that customer service environment. Now, third-party collection is customer service too. There's no doubt about it. But there's less inbound calls. It's more outbound calling, and it is still that traditional commission-driven environment. So we will have people in our agency that go from one environment to the other, and pay tends to be a very large driver between when people decide they'd rather become a collector or whether they'd rather go to the extended business office. So we've been happy to say that there's a role and a right fit for everybody, based on the job duties that they're doing, and then an appropriate compensation structure for them.
Do you find more people going from one side to the other, going from collections to the extended business office, or vice versa?
Typically, it would be an extended business office person going to the collection team, and pay is the driver. I think most times is the driver behind that, because, you know, they get comfortable. They only start in a customer service role. They get comfortable, you know, asking for money, resolving insurance issues, helping with financial assistance and charity care. And as they get more comfortable on the phone, their confidence goes up, and they might say, you know what, if I really want to increase my base pay beyond, and we're offering 50 cents an hour each 6 months based on the scorecard, if I want to increase my base pay more than the 50 cents an hour that the scorecard would give, the right move for that person is a third-party collector.
Got it. Thanks. Let's move to a topic now that I'm sure a lot of agencies and a lot of people who are listening today are spending a lot of their time on, and that's, how do you incorporate compliance into your compensation structure? And Christian, I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of background or perspective on what you've done at your agency.
Well, as I mentioned, we looked into incorporating the compliance as a function of the commission, and we rejected that. Instead, using the compliance as we had been over our 25-year history in monitoring, and I think we do it better now than we ever have, and I think we have to do it better now than we ever have, using learning products like the one offered by Chris Rickman in order to confirm that my employees are trained on all of the alphabet soup of responsibilities they have. As our name suggests, we do medical collections. So in addition to the FDCPA and FCRA and TCPA, and we've got HIPAA along with that, we train our collectors by quizzing them every day. We have our review and audit of our collectors, and I'm jealous, Tracy, with the call analytics. We've not gotten there yet. We're working towards that end. But doing the review of our collectors, doing the review of the accounts worked, having the automation now to automatically review exactly what it is they've done, how long they've been in accounts, what they've done on them, if they've missed anything, and using that for discipline and or termination as we have in the past. Not wanting to confuse those two things, and knowing that, you know, that you do run the risk of, if they're working towards a commission, how do we keep them from doing their, as I think one of the participants, or I'm sorry, one of the viewers had asked, how you keep the Wells Fargo problem out of it. It's very aggressive discipline for those people who don't follow the law and don't follow our own internal policies. And I will make a plug for the PPMS certification that ACA does. We've been PPMS certified for 5 years, and that played a tremendous role in allowing us to have a very, very comprehensive compliance department and process. So for us, the pay, strictly based on what we want them to do, which is to perform, to be able to collect, and the compliance, we keep that separate. And again, we're very aggressive in the disciplining of people who don't follow along with our policies, procedures, and the law.
Got it. What about you, Tracy? Go ahead.
Yes, I'm happy to add to that as well. Thank you. The compliance piece in our extended business office with the scorecard is managed where, if you have a valid complaint, it is an automatic fail of the scorecard. And again, you have to reach your scorecard goals consecutive months to get that increase. So there's, it really can prevent you from getting your increase. On the third party collection side, a valid complaint can result in a loss of the QA bonus, which is $250. And in an extreme situation, it can make a loss of the entire commission part of your bonus plan. So we heavily take away money if there are complaints. We don't tolerate complaints. We put tools in place to avoid complaints and address situations before they happen. That's why we have the real-time speech analytics, and it's why we do an automated quality assurance scorecard that each agent has on their desktop. So quality assurance and compliance are very important to us, as I'm sure everybody, important to everybody that's on the phone here today. And if there is found to be a valid complaint, we take it serious, and there's a monetary reduction or impact for any EBO representative or third-party collector.
Is that something that you've been doing for a while now in terms of incorporating compliance into the actual compensation structure?
Yes. I know I started with state collection over 15 years ago, and there was a quality assurance component the entire time I've been here. It was here before I joined the company. We have obviously put more teeth into it or made those dollar amounts larger of what's at risk if there is a complaint. And we did have a quality assurance section of the bonus plan when we did not have a scorecard in our extended business office. So it really has been there a long time, but over time we've made that penalty more severe.
Got it. Thanks. You mentioned quality assurance. Is it strictly compliance complaints, or can you talk a little bit about what's incorporated in that quality assurance score?
Sure. Our quality assurance score is, we have an automated scorecard that is produced through our post analytics, our post call speech analytics program, and there are compliance sections in third party collection, obviously FDCPA adherence, TCPA adherence, but there's also financial and negotiation language, as well as general call courtesies, helpfulness, account resolution language. So there's many components to the quality assurance scorecard, but the most heavily weighted of those components are the compliance sections. And the same holds true for the extended business office. There is client compliance, and then there is TCPA compliance components. And again, those are weighted most heavily.
Kristen, let's shift gears for a second, and we're still talking about compensation, but let's talk about other incentives maybe that you've noticed that have worked in your office. Are there any non-financial incentives that you think have had success at helping with your overall compensation program?
We have. For us, the only incentive that we've really gotten traction with is awarding people extra hours of time off. It's something that I know everybody, and I'll reiterate, making sure you check your own state and your HR laws and making sure that you're doing everything properly, but we were cleared and we verified that we could award people hours of PTO for various incentives, and that has been extremely popular amongst all of the staff. It's something that we've been able to do for the collection and the support staff. We have implemented it to award them hours based on hitting our monthly goals, which is sort of compensation deferred as far as I go, giving them an extra couple of hours for a given month hitting a goal means I don't have money out of pocket, and it also allows me to schedule that when it's, most advantageous for us, so we don't have people out too often or in the wrong times. But that, amongst all of the other things that we've done, and we've done, I'm sure like most everyone else, a whole slew of incentive-type programs, that's the only one that has really captured everybody's attention and gotten them to work towards that common goal. We've done it as individual contests for particular clients, for particular campaigns, for particular projects as well. Beyond that, and I know this is silly, and I think everybody's got their own little sort of silly contests and rewards that you do for it, but I found that my people are particularly attracted to lottery scratch-off tickets. And we've run campaigns where we've done just today, the top payment getter for today, or the top number of payments over the phone, you get a $2 lottery scratch-off ticket. And you'll be surprised if you can find something that your employees can sort of all rally around, how excited they get over that $2 lottery scratch-off ticket that in most cases doesn't give you any money whatsoever.
Sounds like our shops are very similar to each other, Christian. We like lottery tickets too. Big in our world is food and the snack cart. The managers and the supervisors will push the snack cart around the office, and you know, we have a choice of healthy snacks, fruit and granola bars to, you know, a chocolate bar. So anyway, we have snack carts that go around. But we give a budget to each of our supervisors. They have $10 per employee per month to use for incentives, similar as you're describing. And sometimes it will be a week-long incentive, sometimes it'll be the whole month, or other times they will just use, you know, okay, this next 3 hours, this is what we're doing, and here's the incentive for that. So we really let the supervisors get creative in what they're putting out there as far as incentives for the representatives. They do have to submit purchase orders with their plan for how they're using their incentive money, but by and large, they've got games they play out on the floor, and we've had fun with spinning wheels and Plinko games, and just really have them being creative. They've been passing around a money machine, you know, one of those blow up things, and the dollars fly around, and just doing some fun things like that. But the more of those things you do, and I'm not a tax girl, but I know we keep track of all those incentive monies and work with our accounting team to make sure all of that is properly accounted for. But just being creative, I think, is the best thing, and letting the supervisors submit their ideas is helpful. They come up with all kinds of fun stuff.
Tracy, I would agree with you. I think whenever we've tried to design an incentive program from the top down, we've never had a whole lot of buy-in. But open it up to the supervisors and the employees, and you will find a flood of ways that they can help you spend your money on them. None of which are outrageous, though, and that's the beauty of it. The amount of enthusiasm you see for, you know, $15 or $20 in a day and doing that once a week, to see the enthusiasm because it's something that they want and something that they've had a hand in creating, it's amazing. It's surprising. And I think if you're not asking your employees, you know, what is it you like, we're going to limit it to X number of dollars, and how do you think we should do that, they will surprise you. They will give you some great ideas.
Absolutely. Making work fun is very important to us. In fact, it's one of our strategic goals. So we typically choose 5 strategic goals each year, and number 6 is having fun. And so the employee engagement activities and things like the incentives and continuing to maintain a budget for that, we say always fit in that category of it's goal 6, it's having fun.
So let me ask you this, and Christian, I'll ask with you, do the non-financial incentives work better than the financial incentives at improving productivity or in encouraging certain types of behavior?
I wouldn't say that they work better. I would say that they work hand in hand. It's sort of like having that piece of candy in the afternoon when you're feeling a little sluggish, or your afternoon cup of coffee, versus having a healthy diet and exercising. The commission is what drives them to come into work every day. The small incentives are what keep them motivated when they're feeling down or when they're having a rough go at it. And I really don't know that you can separate them out. For us, we've been doing or trying to do something along with the commissions, you know, the games and the non-financial incentives, since we started, and I'd be hard pressed to tell you that we could live without the non-financial or without those activities, because it's it's a rough job, and the collectors do need that motivation and they do need that encouragement by making it a sort of friendly competition and having a little excitement. I think it allows them to get through the day and want to come back tomorrow.
I agree. We recently looked at schedule adherence. We were seeing more call-offs on Mondays than any other day of the week. I mean, who doesn't want to extend their weekend, I guess? But we noticed that, and that's a problem because especially in an extended business office environment, part of what you do is answering the calls, and you're measured based on your average speed to answer those calls, and your abandonment rate needs to stay below a certain level. And so one of the incentives we had to put into place was Monday Fun Day. And so there's something exciting going on, but you must be present to win on Monday Fun Day. And those are monetary rewards. And they're usually, you know, have your name put in a drawing for XYZ gift card or a certain prize that was picked up. But we typically do those drawings early Monday afternoon or late in the morning on Mondays for those that show up and reached a certain very small or minimal level of productivity on that Monday. So we're primarily rewarding showing up to work. And we have seen an increase in or improvement in our attendance on Mondays since we started Monday Fun Day. So we never had to do that in the past, but we recently started and it's working. So we'll use that for a while. And as long as it's working, we'll continue to use that. So, you know, disappointing as it may sound that you need to put something like that in place for not very much cost, we did it. And we're getting a nice return on that.
And I apologize, I forgot about this one. And Tracy, you just reminded me, I think like all agencies struggle with attendance at times. And we started offering three covered parking spots. As I mentioned, we're about 40 people. And I think one of the people had questioned how many collectors. We're about 25 collectors. The covered parking spots in Arizona in the summer are extremely valuable. That is something that we did with what we call our perfect attendance. And for all of our employees, they're eligible to participate. They can't have any time that they schedule off with less than 24 hours notice. They can't be 1 minute late with their check-ins in the morning, in the leaving in the evening, or their lunches. And it really narrows down the number of people who are eligible for that each month. Because if you miss one, you're out, you know, on the first day of the month, you're out of the running for the parking spot. But it has helped us sort of encourage people to get their act together and be here on time and be here when they're supposed to. Also, any unscheduled time, and I know it may seem unfair, but if they call in sick, obviously they can take their sick time and everything else, but they're out of the running for the parking spot. So it's one of the things that we've done to sort of encourage people to be here and be here when they're supposed to.
That's a really interesting idea. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. When it comes to updating the plan, Christian, do you involve your collectors at all in any stage or in any part of the process in terms of getting feedback from them?
Absolutely. Yeah, for us, it's critical to get their buy-in. I think just telling them what we're going to do wouldn't work, especially with a number of long-term employees. They tend to be a little freer in giving their opinions, and as well they should. They've got the experience and they have our trust and our respect for having been here for a long time. But there's no way that we could just do a implementation without their buy-in and without discussing it with them. And again, I think much like with the non-financial incentives or, you know, the games or the little things that you do for them, they often will have some great ideas. And if it comes from one of your employees, at least the kernel of the change, it tends to get buy-in a lot more quickly from the others because they know that it wasn't just pushed from the top down.
Thanks. Tracy, what about you? Yeah, go ahead.
You bet. I'll just add that when we've made changes, we will talk to some select individuals. But one of the things we do is run run in pilot or take the existing model and the proposed model and make the proposed model as if we had done that for the last 6 months. So basically you're retrofitting the model to see what would have changed. You know, how much more would we have paid out? Would anybody have earned less? Are there any unique or outlier circumstances that we didn't think about? And so we always go and retrofit the model for any changes that we're making. So it's really good because it shows you different scenarios. You never go into it saying, well, I'm going to change, you know, the meld or the minimum or this key part of the scorecard and wait and see what happens. You always retrofit that model. And through the process of retrofitting, you will come up with questions and things you didn't think about, and it may lead you to have conversations with more of the supervisors or the collectors or the EBO representatives just on what that impact really is.
Thanks. Tracy, let me ask you, if you were starting a collection agency today from scratch and were building a compensation structure, would you do it any differently than how you've got it set up now at your agency?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. You know, I think our structure is good, and I would just build in routine reviews and make sure that you're constantly looking at the structure. You know, looking ahead to the future and, you know, where we may go or areas of opportunity in our compensation structure today is just continuing to evaluate the balance between the third-party collector commission and how much they earn in commission versus the base pay, and making sure that the base pay is, you know, a decent livable wage. And that's primarily from a recruiting and retention standpoint more than it is the commission structure, because let's face it, it is hard to recruit third-party collectors who've never been in that commission environment, because if you're selling based on the base pay and you're explaining what their potential pay is, some people can see the light at the end of that tunnel and other people cannot. So we may have to respond to the recruiting and retention needs with the structure that we have today in the near future.
Christian, let me ask you this. Aside from probably the obvious, you know, whereas the compensation isn't high enough, what is the most frequent complaint or area of concern that you receive from employees about the compensation structure?
I think it's the double-edged sword of the commission. If a collector has a particularly bad month and it cuts into their commission more than they expected or more than they're traditionally getting, you know, I find that a lot of the collectors are going, if not paycheck to paycheck, somewhat close to that. And because they're using that commission to budget themselves, when they have a down month, if they have a down month, they really just scream about it. I mean, they let everyone know how miserable they are and how they have to wait to pay off their bills until their next paycheck. So that's the biggest one we get. I think we've done a pretty good job, and we have the same problem that Tracy has. You have to have a high enough base in order to get people in the door, at least interested in it. Getting them to be excited for a commission when they've never done it is particularly rough. So for new employees, having that uncertainty, and it's caused us to raise our base pay over the past couple of years in order to just recruit people, we've handled that by making the base pay higher, but the target then goes up. So the threshold by which or when they hit commission has gone up as well. So they have to generate more revenue. But in some cases, that also causes them to get frustrated quickly, because if the first couple of months they don't hit that goal and they're not getting much in the way of commission, they'll complain about that as well.
And one of our challenges right now is around our extended business office scorecard, and that is finding the right balance between the client-driven goals, which is really the team goal, and the individual performance goals. And so our scorecard, second to the compliance and quality assurance, is the ability for the team to achieve the goal. And then the other individual factors carry less weight. So, you know, it's very hard if you're an individually strong contributor, but you did not achieve your team goal for the month, and that negatively affects your scorecard. So, you know, we talked about any challenges that people raise or questions about the existing process, and that is one that we work through regularly, and really always keep an open mind about the balance between paying on a scorecard and having a team element as well as individual elements. I'm not sure that we'll change it in the near future, but it is, if I had to categorize the most common complaint about our structure, that is the most common complaint we receive.
Great. We have a bunch of questions that have been asked, and we actually have a few questions that were submitted in advance of the webinar. So I'm going to try and get through as many of these. Again, if you want to ask a question, we've only got a few minutes left to do so. Please enter it into your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll do our best to get to as many of these as we can. I think this is an interesting question based on how it appears that there are different approaches between Christian and Tracy's offices. And this is a question: I've tried numerous times to implement a disincentive program, but I'm told by our labor attorney and HR that it would be illegal in the state of in this particular state to deduct funds earned, which include bonuses or commissions. Bonuses and commissions are the same as an hourly salary, in as much as it is earned by achieving certain goals. Can you comment or have suggestions on how to overcome this?
Well, I can jump in and tell you one of the things that I do, and it started as a way to also drive attendance or to maintain attendance, but it turned out being very beneficial and appreciated by my collectors, because when someone is out, unscheduled, and in particular, if they don't have time, and I'm not sure, Tracy, about your office, but for us on the, I would like to say rare occasion, but on the occasion when someone is out of time and they still call in sick, and you've got to make that decision, do we keep them or do we fire them? With a smaller place, we have a tough time with firing people, especially if it's some sort of emergency, but it puts a burden on the rest of the staff. So for us, the collectors who are out and they don't have time available, they do not get payments posted to their queue for that day. Those payments get posted to a house queue, and the revenue from that house queue is then distributed to those employees who have had perfect attendance. It's added to their commission as though they had earned the revenue, and it's split amongst how many of our collectors have perfect attendance. And one of the questions that was submitted earlier sort of touches on this about our discipline. For us, short of firing somebody if they are not compliant with the laws and our own internal policies, we will send people home for a half day or a full day if they commit a violation of our policies. They are then not given payments posted to their queue that day or for those hours either. And again, that doesn't go to us. It does go to a house queue, but that revenue from that queue is split up amongst the collectors who've had perfect attendance. So that's one of the ways that we've not only tried to disincentivize behaviors from our collectors, but reward those collectors who are here working at their desk and giving them some boost because they're carrying the weight when the other people aren't there.
Tracy, do you have anything to add to that?
I would say that we used to do a similar practice, Christian, to the sharing of either the revenue or the bonus that would have been earned with the people that are there. We moved away from that some years ago just because we made a change in the overall structure. But we do have takeaway, if you will, based on those valid complaints for the loss of the QA bonus, or in an extreme situation, the loss of the entire bonus for the third-party group. And then we do have a reduction in the scorecard, which will make an automatic failure on the scorecard in our extended business office as well. So those are the largest disincentives that we're employing at this point. You know, we're very careful about attendance situations, heavily rely on our HR resources, especially if there is any FMLA or ADA considerations. So any attendance misses, we're not removing monies from commissions, and they don't forfeit what's posted to the file for the day or anything like that. Not saying you can or can't. We just don't do that. And then we have our HR team work with the supervisor to manage what's appropriate related to attendance, and then the progressive disciplinary path that we go down using the verbal warning, written warning, 1-2 final, and ultimately termination if that unfortunately happens.
And I do just want to reiterate for us, the not posting payments to their queue for the day is only on an absentee employee who does not have available time off. So we're not doing it if someone calls in sick and they have available vacation or sick time, then nothing changes. It's strictly for those employees who were in, let's say, in the process of the progressive discipline for attendance. And we're in between keeping them and firing them and trying to make sure that we help them correct their behavior. Those are the only ones that are affected, or those who are given a day off or a half day off for disciplinary reasons. That is when the money is not posted to their queue.
Thanks for the clarification. Here's a question from an agency. We litigate files, and collectors want to receive full commission when the court case or attorney was the cause for the recovery. What is your opinion?
I'll take that one if you would like first. We have a special services team that works with our outside attorneys and reviews any accounts that our collectors submit for consideration to the legal process and the client suit authorizations. And for a long time, we did, you know, that account, once it got approved to go through that special services team process, the collector would lose credit for it, or, you know, not receive any bonus or commission. Maybe 5-ish years ago, we added an incentive for the collectors where they would receive a small part, a small percentage of the fee payment that was made on an account referred to the legal process and that got money collected. So we just share a 0.25% of the fee dollars collected with the collectors. Now, it did help us to get referrals, and for the collectors to do that extra legwork that's involved in preparing an account for a legal recommendation. And, you know, that was the primary reason that we instituted that process, is that the collector would have some buy-in to putting, making good referrals and really going through that process. And we're committed to doing that process for the client. So we do share a small amount, but it is very small in comparison to the overall commission structure that they earn.
We do something similar. We share the commission on the payment if and when it comes in, both with accounts that are referred to a legal process, or for us, we have a specialized group that works on health insurance claims that were done incorrectly, or we find that they had health insurance that they didn't present at the time of their visit. So in order to get them to refer accounts, we actually give them, it's about a third of their normal commission. And that's what they'll get if they refer it and it pays.
Okay. What's a good time frame or policy for new accounts being considered house accounts before being assigned to the floor team? Or how do you handle when a payment occurs from a letter without any collector intervention?
I'll jump in first. We do 7 days. The account is a house account for the first 7 days that it's in the office. If a payment comes in, it goes to the house. if someone calls in, the collector gets credit for that payment. But the assignment of the account after 7 days means that any payment driven by a letter gets attributed to that collector. That's just how we've always done it. And it's sort of the give-me's, as the collectors call them. And we've been loath to take that away.
So we do not employ that practice. The accounts are assigned to the collectors from day one of placement with the agency, with one small exception, one small portfolio that's an exception. So we do a complete assignment from day one, and we've thought about doing that differently, but we know that we would have to make changes to the overall compensation if we did. And so for now, it's our practice that we assign accounts, this is in the third party collection environment, to the collectors on day one.
Thank you. There are a couple of questions here about PTO allowance, or in other words, you know, how much time do your collectors get? Is there a difference between sick time and vacation time? Does anyone, either of you want to take this first?
I can. We do use PTO time, so that's one bank. So we do not separate sick or vacation time. That's all in one bank, and we have an aggressive accrual schedule, and we allow time to be earned certainly in the first year, and then it progressively increases based on certain 10-year increments. And we found our PTO accrual process to work fairly well, and do surveys a few times a year, and some of those surveys include benefit questions, and have found that process to be satisfactory.
And for us, Arizona has the initiative process, and last year the voters decided to change it. We used to have just a PTO bank, which everyone loved. We now have to keep track of sick time separately because there are specific requirements for employers to provide sick time. So we had to separate it back out. But we do 2 weeks of vacation and a week of sick time, and we have for the past, I want to say 12 to 13 years. For employees, they're eligible to start earning the time from the very moment they start working. They can't schedule the time until 90 days have gone past, and they earn at the that rate, those 3 weeks, for the first 5 years. After 5 years, they go up to 3 weeks of vacation and 1 week of sick time, and we don't award it on an anniversary date or throughout the year. They actually earn it as they work. So they're awarded PTO based on the number of hours that they've worked over the previous pay periods. The same with the sick time.
Thanks. One more question for you, Christian. With regards to the, I think I've been talking about your covered parking spots in relation to perfect attendance, if someone's out of the running on the first day of the month or relatively early in the month, is there any incentive for them to be on time for the rest of the month? Or do you find that people tend to give up?
Well, the incentive to be on time is really from the discipline that we give people who aren't on time. So this was a sort of carrot as opposed to the stick by offering the covered parking spots. Because we had some extra covered parking spots when we moved about 4 years ago, that's when we started this, we thought it would be a nice way to encourage it. But if someone is not on time or they overextend on their breaks, then we go with our traditional disciplinary process. So no, they hopefully won't continue to do it. But yeah, they do get a little bummed out if they miss on the first day. I will say for the most part, it's usually between weeks 2 and 3 that you see people start to drop off. They really do try at the beginning of the month, and then something will come up, or they'll have something happen, and that's when they'll sort of fall out of the running.
Thank you for that. We've run out of time, so before I let everybody go, I wanted to thank Tracy and Christian for their insights and perspectives today. I'm really thrilled with the quality and quantity of information that they provided, and I hope everybody else found it as valuable and worthwhile as I did. This webinar definitely would not have been possible without their participation. I also want to thank Chris Rickman and Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.peakrevenuelearning.com to learn more about the company. Thank you to everybody who registered, who attended. Thank you to everybody who asked questions and stuck around for the full webinar. I really appreciate it. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars and a copy of this recording in the very near future. And be sure to enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. Thank you. Take care.